from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's opening forum hour, California has raised nearly $9 billion to fund services for the mentally ill. Since Proposition 63, an income tax on millionaires, passed back in 2004. But a recent state auditor's report found the state agencies have failed to adequately monitor how mental health tax dollars are spent. Critics say money was used on questionable preventative programs like yoga classes, gardening, Zumba dance classes, sweat lodges, and buying iPads. We'll discuss the audit and whether the money benefited those most in need, and that's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. According to the U.S. Department of Health, some 75,000 California adults failed to receive mental health treatment last year. And last Thursday, a state audit based on Los Angeles, San Bernardino, Santa Clara, and Sacramento counties confirmed that a significant portion of the billions of dollars in tax revenues raised by California Proposition 63, the Mental Health Services Act, which was designed to help treat mental illness, was spent inappropriately and with little oversight. Approved by California voters back in 2004, the proposition imposed a 1% surtax on income exceeding $1 million to fund mental health illness. And this morning's opening forum hour, we want to discuss the audit and what it means, as well as what is being done to ensure better use of taxpayer revenue from Proposition 62 in the future and what lies ahead for the state's mental health services. We have a couple of guests with us from Sacramento. I want to introduce to you Rusty Seelix, is Executive Director and Legislative Advocate for the Mental Health Association of California, co-authored Proposition 62, in fact, with Senator Daryl Steinberg. And Rusty Seelix, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Good to have you with us. And we also have Rose King with us this morning from Sacramento, political and policy consultant to help draft Proposition 63, again, the Mental Health Services Act. Rose King, good to have you aboard.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. And since you two are on pretty different sides as far as perspectives on this audit and what it reveals to us, let me begin, if I may, with you, Rose King, because back in November of 2009, you did some whistleblowing and complaining about political pork that seemed to morph from what was designed initially to be helping the most severely ill. So I guess the audit not only brings to bear what you had brought up then, but also some serious questions about lack of oversight.
Yes, I filed a whistleblower complaint in November of 2009 because I had worked with the Oversight Commission as an aide to the Attorney General, who sits on the Oversight and Accountability Commission. This was in the first couple of years of implementing the law. So I was there to observe the launching and worked with the Department of Mental Health and saw that first they were going down some path that was invented from some unknown origin, and that I was very troubled by the fact that there was actually no plan, and there are memos of, recording all of that, and in fact there was an audit a couple of years later by the Department of Finance under Schwarzenegger.
Well, forgive me, when you talk about paths of unknown origin, you're talking about what's received a good deal of media attention?
The Department of Mental Health. The Department of Mental Health simply issued requirements that were not consistent with the law, created a different plan than the law called for, and changed the name of the law, and just set it on a course to create a separate system instead of an integrated system. The one of the criticisms of mental health systems, starting with the U.S. Surgeon General, is the issue of fragmentation, that systems are so fragmented. So this was to be an integrated program. It was to expand existing systems and upgrade the quality of services and access. Instead, the chief deviance from that was that the Department of Mental Health described a plan that they sent to the counties that created new programs and instructed them to recruit new clients.
And we're talking here, at least again about what's been reported, of instead of treatment for the severely mentally ill, as originally was, I mean, people with bipolar problems or schizophrenia, there were preventive programs, which we've been told they had such things as yoga and drama classes and massage and sweat lodges. I mean, it gets into kind of the absurdities here.
Well, 100% of the money in my mind, and I think in court, would be found questionably spent because the prevention program was this is a new component that was to be integrated with the systems of care for children, adults, and older adults, and is specifically designed to serve people to prevent mental illnesses from becoming severe and disabling, and to try to, you know, shorten the duration of untreated mental illnesses. And this was language that Mr. Seelix was very instrumental in developing.
Now let me go to Mr. Seelix, because Rusty Seelix, as I'm sure you're well aware, there's been a lot of criticism about things like I've mentioned, drum and art therapy and field trips and all sorts of things in the name of prevention, when the money was, at least about 75% of it, was supposed to go into severe mental illness. And it comes down to some criticism that says money was just handed over to the counties to do with pretty much what they wanted and not having observed.
You know, that's not true at all. In fact, very little of what you said is true. So let me set the record straight here. First of all, the auditor did not find that the money has not been spent has been spent inappropriately. The auditor did say, and Rose and I agree on this, there's a lack of state oversight. And so what we don't know is how effective the programs are. But when they looked at those four counties, they didn't cite a single instance where they could say this money has not been spent in accordance to law. What the report didn't talk about is that over half of the money has gone to a single model program that was a proven program that Senator Steinberg and I worked on together. We called it Whatever It Takes, a full-service partnership is the term now, to take people who are homeless or otherwise with severe mental illness, not getting any care, and bring them into a recovery model of care program. It was an integrated services program that was begun as a pilot that actually Rose herself helped develop the legislation to get it started in the late 1980s. And that model is where the bulk of the money has gone. And, you know, Rose's comments about it being a new program versus the original program, I agree with her. They added some regulations and requirements that were unnecessary. It made it more expensive than it needed to be. But it is still actually going for that same program
that was originally started, and
the overwhelming money is going exactly where it needs to be.
So all this talk again about yoga classes and the sweat lodges and Zumba dancing, all this has been blown out of proportion by the press?
No, yes. Let me put all of that in context. So
the
fact is, when we wrote the act, we decided that, in fact, the voters told us this. They said, yes, the bulk of the money should go to taking care of the people who would be homeless, hospitalized, incarcerated due to not getting mental health care, the street people, so to speak. But why do they have to become street people? Why can't we identify and help people with the early signs of mental illness early on and get them the kind of help they need? So we took 20% of this money, which winds up being about 5% of the total public mental health system, and said, let's spend that on prevention and early intervention, people who are not in that, and figure out where we're going to find them and how can we reach them. Now, the bulk of that money also has gone to things that you would expect it to go to, helping people when they're in primary care, helping people at schools, and the places where the early signs of mental illness can be known. But we also encourage the counties to be innovative. And you mentioned a bunch of things that I'm not even sure actually money was spent on. But the two that you did mention that I do know money was spent on are a good example of how some of these innovations turned out to work extremely well, even though they sound very non-traditional. And that's the gardening and the yoga class. So let me mention that. First of all, the yoga class, the amount of money spent was $600. You know, not a whole lot. It was an alternative to therapy to aid in recovery for a specific group of women in San Francisco in their recovery with mental illness, and they wanted this instead of therapy. It cost half as much as the therapy, and the initial results were it worked better. So for a specific population, that flexibility to try something different turned out to work really well. We're not suggesting that across the board yoga should replace therapy as the main way to treat mental illness, but in certain situations, there are therapeutic value from yoga. That's well documented, and you could see that it might aid in stress relief and other ways to help certain people. The gardening is another one.
Really,
the gardening was for...
Hold off, if you would, Ms. King. I want to at least have him finish his letter.
The gardening were Hmong gardens for the Hmong population in Fresno, and actually that project got an award. It got an award from the people studying all the best programs to engage Asian and Pacific Islander communities, because it turns out that the Hmong population in Fresno, which is a very large population, where do those people go to talk about their problems? They don't go to a doctor. They don't go to a mental health therapist. In fact, in the Hmong language, there are no words for mental health. Where they go is to the gardens, and they talk to each other. And if you put a professional at the gardens and work with them in the gardens, that's how you will find their mental illnesses early in their onset. So again, it's an innovative thing. It doesn't sound right, but it turns out it probably is a good strategy.
We're talking to Rusty Steelix of the Mental Health Association of California. I know Rose King wants in here, but I just have to cut to the chase here for a moment, Mr. Steelix, because we do have more people in jail now, and we've had certainly a lot of talk about people populating the jails to a greater degree because they've been shuffled off because of mental health. We have a decrease in psychiatric beds here in San Francisco. We have fewer doctors treating patients. We have fewer mental health clinics than before. So, you know, one might easily ask, despite the recession and despite all the cutbacks, has the money really gone into helping the severely mentally ill, which was supposed to be where the bulk of this money was supposed to go?
First of all, absolutely, the bulk of the money has gone into helping the severely mentally ill. The problem is that cuts in other state funding, the other funding, as I mentioned, this act provides about $1 billion a year of funding. That's out of about $5 billion of total funding. Well, that $5 billion is roughly $700 million a year less than what it would have been but for the recession and cuts in that other funding that happened. So the result is that almost all of this money has gone simply to backfill other cuts that happened, and virtually none of it has been available to do what we promised the voters would do, is expand the system. Fortunately, the Affordable Care Act and economic recovery and some things the legislature did last year can get us back on track to eventually get to where we think the act was going to get us to. But as of right now, I can fully understand, you know, frustrations that, hey, we have not accomplished what we set out to do. But it's not because the money from the act isn't being spent appropriately. It's because the other funding is not what it used to be.
And Rose King, you wanted to respond.
Yes. Well, first of all, I think the auditor did not say that the money was not spent appropriately. The auditor did not attempt to determine that, whether or not it was appropriate or inappropriate. The auditor determined that no one knows, and that is still the case. As to the prevention programs, first of all, the yoga and the gardening has been talked about more, but it's also that counties are funding programs, other social programs that may absolutely have merit for the community. In Sacramento, there's a consultation with the first five programs. There are they are funding programs to reduce prevent youth violence and reduce or eliminate family conflict programs to provide social skills for youth. In every county, there are many laudable programs that should be funded by either, you know, some foundation or some pot of money for social services. But this is at the expense of mental illness treatment money.
Now, let me if I may, again, Rose King is a political and policy consultant who helped draft Prop 63. She's with us by phone, as is Rusty Steelix. But so is Debbie Innes-Gomberg. And I want to bring bringing her into this because she's district chief with the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. They oversee the Mental Health Services Act and implement an outcome came from Los Angeles County as one of the leading four that were profiled here. And she was a lead on the recent audit. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Ines Gomberg. Good to have you aboard.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I guess the first question to you is this money wisely spent? I mean, there's a lot of talk about waste and about discrimination and money inappropriately spent. There's even been some suggestion that about $23 million of this money went to those who were involved with the Oversight Commission.
I think the money is being very well spent. And one of the things the Los Angeles County was praised for, really, was our outcomes. And if you look at our full-service partnership outcomes, which is, Mr. Selig said, is over 50% of the community services and supports plan, you see dramatic reductions in days homeless for adults, a 71% reduction. You see a 49% decrease in the days spent in incarcerated settings for adults. The UCLA, through the Oversight and Accountability Commission, found that for adults in full-service partnership programs, we had a 262% decrease in terms of cost offsets. So the cost of the programs, the benefits of the programs way exceeded the costs.
So why this criticism on both sides about lack of effective metrics in terms of judging and standardizing?
You know, I think each county has really put quite a bit of effort into collecting outcomes and into reporting them to their local stakeholders. I think it's really about the information technology aspect to get that data to the state to create a statewide story. We have a tremendous amount of outcome data that we use locally to improve the quality of our services and then to inform our stakeholders about our implementation efforts of those programs.
And the money is going to, in your judgment, where it's most needed, to the severely mentally ill?
It really is. And you know, I think when you look at our prevention and early intervention programs, which are really only 20% of our Mental Health Services Act funding, those programs are entirely evidence-based. We've actually implemented the largest evidence-based practice or service array probably in the world, and we have some very impressive outcomes to date so far around reduction of symptoms and reduction of ongoing need for care as a result of our early intervention services. And prevention, I think, is also very important. You need a full continuum of services to, I think, impact mental illness and to reduce its incidence. And so that's what we've done in Los Angeles.
So let me go back to you, Rose King. Why are you arguing that it's not evidence-based? And why are you saying that there's really no not enough empirical evidence here? Rose King?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. First of all, she was just discussing all of the data that you're hearing is evaluation of 5% of the population in public mental health. And first of all, the Sacramento County, Los Angeles County Mental Health Emergency Room Directors would not agree that the money is being well spent. The LA Times reported that every single hospital emergency room is overwhelmed. And what's not being told here is that the state also issued a prohibition against serving people with mental illness in prevention programs, which eliminates the people who the possibility of preventing people's mental illnesses from becoming more severe and disabling, eliminates the possibility of shortening the duration of untreated mental illnesses. So people with mental illness are from the off the top excluded from these programs. And plus all of this success data that you hear and all of the evaluation money, all of the huge investment made is about the 27,000 people that Mr. Selig refers to as in full-service partnerships. Now, this is 5% of the people in public mental health. In 2004, when we were, when the initiative went on the ballot, 5% of the population was fully served. So after $10 billion and 9 years, we still have 5% of the population fully served.
Let me get a response to what you just said from Rusty Seelix. But also, Rusty Seelix, I want to mention that DJ Jaffe, whom we spoke to, is executive director of the World Illness Policy Organization, has said that those who receive a lot of this funding have actually been distributing the money. And he also mentioned you have a $600,000 salary that's paid by the mental health care providers. So there's a lot of questions about how this money is being spent and by whom it's being distributed.
Yeah, well, first of all, that $600,000 doesn't go to me personally. It goes to a business that bears my name and employs five people. So it's that's a misnomer. The other part of it is that, you know, the $23 million spent on oversight, yes, there is money being spent by the state on an oversight commission, and the oversight commission has contract entities. So there is some money being spent on oversight and involving organizations to make sure that the voices of consumers and families are at the table. Ms. King is not quite right when she says that the people with mental illness can't participate in prevention or early intervention. The key is they can't already have a severe and disabling mental illness, that they have to be caught in the early stages of a mental illness before it's severe and disabling, because the whole purpose is to prevent it from becoming severe and disabling. And that's an area where she and I have disagreed for years. And, you know, I think the bulk of the experts in the community would tend to think that the money there is appropriately targeted so that you can prevent people from higher need. And the issue about, you know, after $9 billion, we haven't significantly increased the numbers we're serving adequately. Unfortunately, she's right. But again, as I've said earlier, the reason she's right isn't because this money hasn't been properly spent. It's because the counties have lost so much of their other funding that most of this money has gone to backfilling those losses, and very little of it has been available to increase the number served. It's a great tragedy of the effect of the recession.
But you also agree that the state needs more uniform tools.
I would agree that the state needs more uniform tools. I would agree with her and others. I certainly don't have any criticisms for what Los Angeles is doing, but there's a line about don't be a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, focus on those handful of things that really work. Unfortunately, we're still at a stage where we're still learning what that is in the prevention and early intervention area. I have a friend who's a cardiologist who said, when I started practicing, we did 100 different things. Now we do 5 because we've learned which were the most effective ones and now only do those.
All right, we're coming up on a break and I have to give out the phone number, and let me do that because I know there are many of you who want to weigh in on this important topic we're talking about. And this morning, by the way, the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission and the California Department of Healthcare Services have provided a 6-year schedule of evaluation reports in response to Senator Steinberg's call for full evaluations. Also, the Oversight Commission declined to participate in today's show. We invited them. But you can participate, and in fact, we invite you to do so. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Any questions or comments you might have, feel free to call us now. Toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, and you can tweet us as well. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking with Rose King, political and policy consultant who helped draft Proposition 63, and Rusty Seelix, executive director and legislative advocate with the Mental Health Association of California. Debbie Innes Goldenberg is also with us. She's district chief of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. And feel free to join us. We welcome your calls and your involvement. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The state of California has raised nearly $9 billion to fund services for the mentally ill since the passage of Proposition 63, which was an income tax on millionaires, passed back in 2004. But a recent state auditor's report found that state agencies have failed to adequately monitor how mental health tax dollars are spent, and critics say money was used on questionable preventative programs like yoga classes, gardening, and buying iPads. And we're discussing the audit and whether the money benefited those most in need. Rusty Seelix is with us. He's executive director and legislative advocate with the Mental Health Association of California, co-author with Daryl Steinberg, Senator Daryl Steinberg, of Proposition 63, and with us also Rose King, both from the state capitol, political and policy analyst who helped draft Prop 63, the Mental Health Services Act. We also spoke earlier with Debbie Innes-Gomberg, who was district chief of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health and was head of the recent audit. And we are going to get you involved in this. And again, appreciate your involvement. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet us, our Twitter handle at KQED Forum, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum. I want to go first, though, to Assemblyman Dan Logue from the 3rd District, California State Assembly there. Around Chico, and he's vice chair of the Assembly Health Committee. And Assemblyman, good to have you with us. Welcome and good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be on your station.
Glad to have you. And I guess let me get right to the chase here, cut to the chase here. From your perspective, something needs to be done. And what are you doing as far as legislation?
Well, last year I asked for an audit on this when I saw that some of the resources were going to areas that really weren't, determined that they should be going to. So the audit came out just recently, as you know, and it shows that there's actually almost hardly any oversight on where the funds are going. I guess the big question is where's the commission on this, and why haven't they had better oversight? So my issue is we're looking at legislation that would require each county to provide an audit annually to determine if those funds are going to programs that are actually helping the people under the umbrella of Prop 63.
And this would provide the kind of accountability that many are criticizing is not present?
Well, yeah. I mean, remember when they do the audit, they only covered like 4 counties. They couldn't do the whole state because it would cost a fortune. But they only covered 4 counties out of 58 counties. So that means there's another 54 counties that haven't had any kind of response to this audit. So the bottom line is the resources are going to the counties, but there's no accountability. We don't know if the money's being spent wisely. We don't know if the money's spent well or not. We have no idea because nobody knows.
So this will go to all 58 California counties?
That's the intention, is to ask for each county. And I would hope that the counties would actually do this on their own without legislation, that they would volunteer that information to make sure that their programs are evidence-based, that their programs are meeting the needs of the community individually, and that the resources are going to people who actually need the help. I mean, you've got to realize that the help is, the categories is adult funding, adult children funding, and then innovation. In those 3 areas, that's where the money's supposed to go to.
Assemblyman, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with this, and I hope you can move it forward.
Thanks so much. Good luck.
Dan Logue, again, is Assemblyman for the 3rd District, and he's pushing for legislation. I want to just briefly bring Debbie Innes-Gomberg back into this because she is, again, District Chief of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health, which oversees the Mental Health Services Act and implements and outcomes for Los Angeles County, which I want to get this straight. She was not the lead on the recent audit. Los Angeles County was in the lead. There was more, in fact, data from Los Angeles County than there was from the other 3, San Bernardino, Santa Clara, and what am I leaving out here? Sacramento. Debbie, you want to make a final statement. I want to give you the opportunity to do that.
I did, and thank you very much. I just wanted to respond to some of what I've heard. And part of it is that the counties are really accountable to their local stakeholders, which include a variety of folks, including people from law enforcement, from healthcare, family members and consumers, education, a variety of stakeholders that are important to our communities and that support our communities. And each year we create a full report that then is sent up to the Oversight and Accountability Commission that lists our outcomes, the status of our programs and our outcomes. And we have a full continuum of services that goes from crisis intervention, alternative crisis services, step downs to those FSP programs, and then wellness programs, and of course, prevention and early intervention. And all of those services have an evidence base to them. I mean, it's actually, when you look at the Mental Health Services Act and you read through it, you get the sense that they really wanted counties to build off of successful efforts like AB 2034 and the Mentally Ill Offender Crime Reduction Program, Children's System of Care. So I just wanted to let folks know that counties spend a tremendous amount of time really trying to capture the impact of these programs, and we listen to our stakeholders, we incorporate that feedback, and we modify our programs each year as a result of that.
And you welcome Assemblyman Logue's move in legislation, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we welcome the opportunity to improve our services. And the most recent audit helped us to better improve our local processes. So we would welcome an opportunity to work with the state and the legislature to improve those services even more.
Okay. Again, thank you so much for joining us. That's Debbie Innes-Gomberg, who is District Chief, Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. Let me go right to your calls. Rose from Oakland, good morning.
This could not have come at a better time. As usual, we hear from all of the people on the top who tell us how a program is supposed to work, and you do not hear from the people in the trenches. I've been at this for about a year. I am my son's advocate. He's a 46-year-old man who suffers from paranoid schizophrenia. He has since he was 17. He is in a skilled nursing facility because his mental illness has made him completely disabled and almost totally bedridden. It's a long history, but I'll give it short. It is impossible for me as an individual to get a psychiatrist to come in and to evaluate him. And I have talked to every single phone number there is that has anything to do with getting help in Alameda County. There's a lot of money that's going towards manning all these offices and all these people that answer the phone and tell you what they cannot do. And I'd like to know, where is this money being spent? My son, if he could get a licensed psychiatrist to come in and evaluate him and put him on the right medication, which I know the medication because he was on it before in another state. Now, this has been going on for a year. I had him brought in from another state because I thought it would be better here in California. Let me tell you, it's not.
Well, you know, when you speak about, and I'm sorry you've gone through all this travail with your son, to put it mildly, I certainly feel badly for you. And I'm just wondering about, you talk about people at the top. Actually, Ms. King, who we have with us here, Rose King, has gone through a lot of personal travail as well. I know that you may not want to speak about this directly, Rose King, but part of this certainly must color your attitude in terms of, well, you've had a couple of suicides in your family?
Yes. My husband died by suicide, and my son was diagnosed with a mental illness in 1984, and so have been in the trenches for decades. At the time of my husband's death, I really, really didn't know anything about the mental health system, and like many other parents, when my son became ill, we had to become an overnight expert in this mysterious, disorganized, really non-system, and this is what everybody calls it, and this is what I believe the auditor has made clear here, is that she can give no assurance to the public that the money is spent properly, that it is funding what it's supposed to fund. Sacramento, I am still advocating for a third generation of family members who are in the system and in the public mental health system. And there's no predictability about what you can count on. People go in California, the services are different in every county. There's no consistency from one county to the next. People move from one county to another to try to get better services. There's still people wait months for an appointment with a psychiatrist. We have no information about the system today. And so, you know, the reason why the auditor can't really tell us a lot, and the reason why Mrs. Felix and I could exchange, information about this for days, but we really are all operating from a vacuum of information. We do not know the facts of system quality in each county. There is no baseline.
But let me just ask you, because when we heard the caller a moment ago, whose name is also Rose, talk about her personal experience, From your perspective, this is widespread, and this is just one of the many, many stories that we would be apt to hear along these lines.
It is very, very widespread. And when I filed my whistleblower complaint, I started hearing from people all over the state, and I continue to do so. And we finally created with Teresa Pasquini, a woman in Contra Costa, a Facebook site, so people started posting their stories because we believe that these stories will be the most powerful agent of change, since information hasn't changed things a lot.
Well, let me bring another caller on here. I want to get to as many. A lot of people want to tell their stories or let us know what they're thinking. And this is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, join us. Hi.
Hi, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist in Oakland. I've practiced psychology for 25 years. 4 years ago, I burned out, put my license on hold, studied religion briefly, but then I had to hustle and get a lot more continuing education to get my license active again. And I think that I just want to make a comment about the terms evidence-based treatment and then also standard of care. I think that the concept of standard of care is very, very different in mental health than it is in cardiology, for example, in that it's much more difficult to assess the research. Evidence-based care basically means that as a practitioner, you keep up with the research. Yoga, there's all kinds of evidence right now about the plasticity of the brain. Any licensed mental health professional, whether LCSW, MFT, or my degree as a psychologist, when we get our continuing education, there's a lot of exciting evidence about the plasticity of the brain and how calming the brain in a meditative way, such as with yoga and then combined with exercise, because exercise is an extremely effective antidepressant. So I think my general comment is how difficult it is, whether you're trained and licensed in the field or a politician or a policymaker, to assess and implement the, I'm in favor of standard of care in mental health treatment. I'm very much in favor of evidence-based treatment, which to me means that we're responsible for keeping up with the research. But it is very, very different to apply these things to mental health care or psychiatric care than it is to physical care such as cardiology.
Yeah, point well taken. And thank you, Elizabeth, for that call. And I'm going to some of the emails now before I go to more calls. Rusty Seelix, listener, writes here, Rusty Seelix is one who is grubbing for funds. He and his organization are part of the problem. The MHSA money was not ever intended to be spent on funding organizations that do not give care and service to seriously mentally ill people who need help. And as I'm sure you're aware, a lot of the criticism that's come down has been because of organizations and conventions, apparently, that have been funded and brochures and things of that sort. This has all been reported in the press. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been in print. What do you say to all that?
Well, first of all, it's a very tiny amount of the money that's gone to those organizations, and it's gone for a single purpose, which is to make sure that people like caller Rose have a seat at the table, to make sure that the consumers and family members of people with severe mental illness who don't have paid jobs by providers can participate in the decision-making process, be among the stakeholders. The other thing it's gone for is to outreach to the media, because the media is very important. The stigma against mental illness is an enormous part of the prevention and early intervention problem. People don't seek help because of the discrimination against people who have mental illnesses. They don't speak out about having mental illnesses because of that discrimination. The Act specifically called for some of the funds to go with tackling that problem, and so naturally some of that money can't be spent on direct care. But what we know is this. When the media writes something that has the portrayal of people with mental illness as being dangerous or somebody you don't want to associate with, that's going to have an inhibitory effect that will cause many people who could have sought prevention, early intervention care to not seek it. Whereas when the media writes a better story that talks about the success of care and successful programs, it encourages people who have a mental illness themselves or in their family from seeking care. So it does actually have a cost-effective value in terms of people getting care who otherwise might not have gotten care. And so while it's not dollars on direct services, it will lead to more people getting help earlier, which means fewer fewer people that will need the higher cost care, the hospitalization costs, the nursing home costs, the ones that really are like, again, Rose's son, perhaps will never be able to lead a fully productive life because probably of decades of neglect. We want to avoid those situations. And if we can just avoid a few of those, it more than pays for the cost of those types of programs. So the ununderstood, I think the thing that we can all agree on, and Rose King and I think and I can agree on this, is we don't have the data. You know, while Los Angeles County has done a great job of documenting the value of its services to people in Los Angeles, the people in the rest of the state don't have that information. When we wrote the act, it was my firm belief that some counties would do better than others. And what we don't have is the data that shows which counties are doing the best. Which county's choice among these many types of programs, some, as the previous caller Elizabeth said, might not be traditional but might work better. Where is the data that compares all of the county results and allows at a statewide level and in each county to see, well, not just what their own county is doing, but how what their county is doing compares to what the other counties are doing, so we can really learn together what are the best things, and then we'll, you know, gradually over time focus more and more of the dollars on those few things that really work the best and not on some of the things that turn out not to work as well. And I think, as the caller Elizabeth said, some of the ones that are being questioned might actually turn out to be the most cost-effective, but I think the what we have to concede, and as Rose King said, and as what the auditor said, we really don't have that firm knowledge yet, and there's a need for the state to move forward. And by the way, what also hasn't been mentioned is there is a plan now. The Oversight and Accountability Commission has a comprehensive evaluation plan.
Actually, I mentioned and that. I did mention that. But again, Rusty Seelix is executive director of the legislative advocate.
And what I was going to say is that and they've committed to doing it. So I think, you know, the good news is that all the state agencies and the local agencies that were given recommendations by the auditor are now committed to doing them. I will admit it's later rather than sooner, and I wish we already had that by now so they weren't having to have these conversations, that we would know that the money is all going for the things that work the best. And I have to admit we don't know that yet on a statewide basis.
I want to read some more emails here. Let me do that. Hillary writes, as someone who has worked in the mental health services industry for over a decade, I find this conversation completely infuriating. Treating mental health issues is incredibly complicated and must be personalized for each client, hence the need for niche programs. All of the accusations of the money not being spent well is really just a thinly veiled attack by the rich who are still upset about having to pay for mental health services. These services benefit all people in California, not just the poor. And Teresa says, please stick with the data and the facts and the law. Mr. Seelix twists the facts to suit PR talking points. The full-service partnerships are not doing whatever it takes. There is no evidence of quality or continuity of care. There is no compliance. Contra Costa Mental Health Commission has called for a county audit. And by the way, we spoke with Peter Manis, who is with the Contra Costa Mental Health Commission, who says all you have to do is look at Section 3, which talks about all funding for serious mental illness and for early identification and intervention of serious mental illness in Prop 62. And I mentioned that, too, because here's an email that sort of twists what I said. It says, wow, Michael, you really have some attitude. Yoga and drama classes are absurd. It's not what I said. I raised the question about those kinds of things being, are they as important as serious mental illness and giving attention completely to serious mental illness. But this listener writes, such comments do not help the intelligent conversation that your guests are having. I'd suggest you spend some time working with people who have difficulty integrating into mainstream society. Many get more and more alienated the less they can calm themselves or communicate their feelings. Certainly agree with that. Ellen writes, I'd like to address the disparagement by the media and others of yoga, Zumba, gardening, and other alternative treatments for the prevention of mental illness. My main question is, what do you think the treatment should be? Laying on a couch, pouring your heart out to a psychiatrist? Maybe that's one aspect, but certainly activities that bring a person joy, a clear mind, relaxation, emotional release, etc., can elevate a person's mood and possibly prevent a downward spiral into mental illness. I know I do yoga just as much for my mental health as my physical health, maybe even more so. Same goes for gardening, hiking, dancing. The ignorance about mental illness and treatment is disheartening. Let me get to another caller, and that's Richard from Pengrove. Good morning. Oops. Is this Richard?
Hello?
I'm sorry. Do I have Michael in San Francisco or Richard from Pengrove?
This is Michael.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
Sorry. Thank you. I just think that in terms of the comments about yoga and all these other things, I think there's a lot of ways to impact psychosocial well-being of individuals. I think in looking at the you know, basic research that I've done, you know, Rusty is one of the highest paid consultants in California, and I think he is also a gatekeeper. So why is that important? I think because when you look at the organizations that are having successful outcomes, they may not, and they may be based within the community, they may be based in other areas, county agencies. I did look at some very successful county mental health services like LA, like Humboldt County. Some of them have more integrated approaches, and I think that's going to be a key because psychosocial support comes in all of those areas. It may be health, it may be community, building community. My problem is the gatekeepers are the same people giving funding, and I think there needs to be a better accountability and a better way to integrate multiple services. And we have to look at where the money is, follow the money.
All right. I thank you, Michael, for that call. And I want to go right to another caller, and that's Richard from Pengrove, whom I mentioned earlier. Richard, welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for the program. And you know, you might want to check a little bit. Some of the earlier rhetoric was holding your devil's advocate hat a little bit too tightly today. But anyway, the point is, I've been a mental health line care worker, and I'm in education now. And again, I noticed that we're doing the same thing that we do in other places, and that is, as soon as things get a little bit tight and money has been withdrawn from all these other areas, as the gentleman stated earlier, it doesn't mean that the programs, creative and otherwise, and by the way, many of them have a terrific track record, especially with people I directly worked with and sat with and took care of and spent the night over caring for and so on, all these different things. As soon as we find out that that money's a little bit tight, we go after the thing that we don't understand or the name that we don't recognize or the thing we associate with other things. Mental health field is an extremely important and broad field, and the more creative we can be and the better care in a open, loving way we can bring to it, an understanding way, we won't have to be sitting in the back seat then anymore, pulling ourselves back and saying, hey, wait a minute, where did that other money go, and why don't we have it here, and why isn't it helping this person, when in fact, we're helping lots of people. It doesn't mean that you have to take away the money. We need that some of that other money back. We need some of those other monies back. Don't go after the programs that you don't understand because you don't recognize the name.
All right, Richard, I thank you for your call. And let me go to another listener comment. I would love for these alternative therapies to be taken seriously enough so that they can eventually be covered by insurance and therefore available to individuals who can't easily afford such services. And a listener writes, since Mr. Selig says oversight was negligent, does he favor replacing the commissioners who failed to exercise oversight? I think that's a question to you.
No, I do not. Actually, the failed oversight in the past, I think, was largely a result of some bureaucracies under previous governors and previous people that are no longer here. I think the commissioners that we now have are committed to doing the right things, and most of them have just recently been appointed. So, no, I don't. I think they are part of the solution, not the problem.
Well, Rose King, what would you like to see done?
I would like to say, first of all, the yoga and dancing subject is really not an issue. It is that this prevention money is handed to counties that to fund virtually any social program that they can claim contributes to community well-being. So it's effectively a slush fund for counties that can fund a favored constituency or any special interest. And The issue is that counties we do not know what counties are doing. The auditor is, I'd like to get back to talking about what the auditor told us, is that there is no organization, there is no plan from top to bottom, from the Oversight Commission to the Department of Mental Health, now the Department of Health Care Services, the Planning Council. They all have failed to have a plan or to advise counties about what was the beginning point of this and what is the end point supposed to look like. One of the things the auditor said is that the programs did not stipulate what was to be the benefit or the product of these plans.
No objectives, in other words. No, you're saying there were no objectives.
I mean, that doesn't happen.
I just want to reiterate what you're saying is there were no objectives, and I want to leave it, and we're going to have to leave it there because we're flat out of time here. But I want to also extend thanks to those who participated in the program. Rose King, again, is political and policy consultant and helped draft Prop 63, the Mental Health Services Act, and Russi Seelix is executive director and legislative advocate for the Mental Health Association of California, co-authored Prop 63 with Senator Daryl Steinberg. We will continue, of course, to cover the story and to watch it as it unfolds. It's going to be interesting to see how things turn. I want to thank the assemblyman who joined us and pretty much specified where the legislation is likely to go, at least the legislation he's sponsoring. And I also want to thank Debbie Ennis Gomberg, who joined us earlier, District Chief of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health, which oversees the Mental Health Services Act. We are coming up on another hour of forum. We're going to decidedly shift, maybe dramatically shift gears here. Gary Camille is going to join us, a co-founder of Salon.com, who has written a book. Well, it's really a love letter to San Francisco and a combination of experiences that involve having walked all of San Francisco. And I do mean all of San Francisco, nooks and crannies and everything else that you could possibly imagine. That's up ahead in the next hour. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. We always welcome hearing from you about what you hear and what you like and what you'd like to hear. You can email us forum at kqed.org or go to our Facebook page or go to our website. In fact, you can certainly continue this conversation on our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. I want to give thanks to our staff, our senior editor, Dan Zoll, our producers, are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and our Antina Larberg, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.